This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony, and it's great to have you with me again here on Chai FM.
Boker tov. Before we get into the serious stuff, Simon, I wanted to just tell listeners about a story which I picked up on, which I thought was a nice way to start the day with all the things going on. And this is a story about a 5-ton stone that belongs to the Western Wall that was damaged in the Western Wall during a period in history when the Roman 10th Legion actually were involved in destroying the Second Temple, and this rock of 5 tons, weighing 5 tons, was toppled by the Roman 10th Legion during that period of the destruction of the Second Temple. That stone has survived. It has up until now been displayed at the Knesset. It was also loaned for a display at Ben Gurion Airport for a period of time, and yesterday, in a special ceremony, was returned back to the Western Wall, back to the place that it originated from. And this is just one of the many, many stories that links the modern day Israel to the amazing history that we've had over the years. And especially this time of Hanukkah, when many people like to visit places that are linked to the events that took place during that time. In Jerusalem, when the oil burned for 8 days unexpectedly, and at other times of the year when we're able to visit special places in Israel where historical events have taken place, we like to go back to those places and to revisit them just to reinforce our modern day link to the incredible history of this country and this land and our people. And this stone, I think, really is a great example of that.
100 million percent, and to think that there are those who question our indigeneity. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing. So good. Thank you for starting off this morning in that fashion. Like you said, let's get to the more serious news. Very interesting, this relationship between Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Seems like all our eggs are in one basket. It's hugely important that the relationship is good. What are the latest developments in that regard?
Well, President Trump said that he's, inverted commas, looking into whether Israel violated the ceasefire agreement by killing Hamas leader Ra'ad Saad, which was an event that took place on Saturday, an incredible clinical attack. The Hamas number two, who was very involved in orchestrating the events of October the 7th and has been very involved since then in orchestrating the events of the war that have taken place over the last couple of years, and has somehow managed to evade IDF attention by seemingly staying underground for most of the time. He finally came up over the weekend, and the Israeli intelligence picked up on the fact that he was traveling in an area in Gaza, which apparently Israeli drones were tracking him. They had good quality intelligence on the ground and in the air that he was the man that they were looking for. A drone had been redirected from an activity that it was undertaking in another part of Gaza, and managed to fire a clinical missile which hit the Skoda Jeep vehicle that he was traveling in. Only the people who were actually in that vehicle were impacted by this. And Hamas number two, with blood on his hands, and who was eulogized at his funeral as being one of the amazing, in inverted commas, instigators of October the 7th. So there was absolutely no doubt, even from the Hamas side, that he was involved in everything that happened on October the 7th. He was ultimately taken out of the loop. And the Israeli government have said, have justified this right now by saying that he has been working in contradiction of the ceasefire agreement, which is demilitarization of Hamas. That was one of the stated objectives of the ceasefire agreement. And both Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Defense Minister Yisrael Katz have made announcements saying that Raad Saad has been involved in remilitarizing, in reinforcing Hamas's military strength, which is entirely contrary to the spirit and to the letter of the ceasefire agreement. Having said all of that, President Trump now feels that he needs to look into whether Israel has violated the ceasefire by killing the Hamas leader. But my impression of this is it's kind of lip service. It's sort of a statement that Trump is making out of no choice, which really doesn't have much impact because he can look into it as much as he likes. The event is done. Saad is taken out of the loop. He's taken out of the line of control. Whatever influence he's been having over the militarization of Hamas, over reinforcing Hamas as a power in Gaza, is now completely removed. And even if there might well be some sort of a sanction placed on Israel, some sort of a punishment, if you like, for taking this action and for potentially violating the ceasefire agreement, I don't think that that sanction can be anything near as significant as the fact that this man is no longer alive to pull the strings and to continue to try to influence events over the coming months in Gaza. So my impression is that even though on the face of things, this kind of looks like a President Trump being critical of Israel and potentially even thinking about a punishment of some sort or thinking about whether Israel is not okay, hasn't behaved well, I just think it's a statement which has very little significance. I think that we are still very well coordinated with President Trump. And as the Israeli government has gone out of its way to try to emphasize, it's not only that Saad has blood on his hands, that he's been involved in historical events. It's not only that we've been targeting for a while and we now have the opportunity and we've used it irrespective of what's going on the ground. It is also that he has been working against the principles of the ceasefire agreement. And that by itself should surely justify the action that Israel has taken.
Anthony, Beverly has asked a question this morning. It's kind of related to what you were talking about. If we're talking about ceasefire agreements and obligations, she says, what about our last hostage? With all that's going on in Bondi, he seems to have been neglected. Has there been any update or pressure? I wonder if you
So I certainly can say a few things which I think are pleasing in the terms of how Israel is trying to take care of our last hostage, Ran Gvili, who remains somewhere, his body in Gaza, and his family have come out saying that they still they lit candles outside the small place where the Gvili family live, and they lit candles with Ronnie's picture up. And his father said, he's not dead until I receive his body to bury him. Now, the good news is that we do understand that there has been activity in Gaza with the Red Cross and with Hamas people involved, apparently, ostensibly searching for his body to bring it home. Whether that is genuine activity, we can all interpret for ourselves, but certainly there has been activity. And the Israeli government actually has come out saying that it believes that Hamas knows where the body is buried. Not that we know where the body is buried, but they think that Hamas knows where the body is buried, and therefore the obligation is clearly on Hamas to ensure that that body comes home. And President Trump has actually made a statement saying that he doesn't wish to move on to the second phase of the ceasefire agreement until the last body is brought home. And I think that that's an incredibly strong statement. Whether, in fact, he will adhere to that ultimately remains to be seen. But certainly, as things stand at the moment, We have our yellow flags out and our ribbons are up everywhere. And Rani Gvili's picture is displayed everywhere. And we are waiting for him to come home. And for us, this phase doesn't end until he's brought home for proper burial. So it might look like it's kind of been diluted and lost in the mix, but it's still very much at the forefront of activities here.
Anthony, let's move on to the next interesting issue, that the ICC has upheld warrants for the arrest of Netanyahu and Gallant.
Yes. So this was a ruling that was issued by the International Criminal Court in The Hague some years ago, which issued arrest warrants for two Israeli leaders, Prime Minister Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. And officially, countries that are signed up to the Rome Statute, which constituted the International Criminal Court, are obliged to arrest those two individuals if they come to countries that are signed up to the Rome Statute. Israel is not signed up to the Rome Statute, but the point is that this makes very uncomfortable for those two individuals in their attempts to move around the world. Not only are they not allowed to go to countries which are signed up to the Rome Statute for fear of being arrested in those countries, but also those countries who want to be really pedantic can deny a plane overfly rights if they know that the plane has Gallant or Netanyahu on board. So it can get very, very messy. Having said that, there are some countries who are signed up to the Rome Statute who have said they will not arrest Netanyahu or Gallant if they come there. But nonetheless, this is a very uncomfortable situation. And Israel decided to file an appeal against this decision to the appeal committee of the International Criminal Court, which is sort of the highest level of committee that you can actually appeal to at the International Criminal Court. And interestingly, this committee has five members, and the vote to maintain the arrest warrant was taken by a very, very slim majority on the committee of 3-2. So there were two people on that committee who felt that Israel's case was justified. And what Israel argued, I mean, Israel has many, many arguments, but the one that they put forward that they thought would be most successful is the argument of what they call complementarity, which means that every country that is investigated by the International Criminal Court is initially entitled to receive notification of the investigation that's going to be conducted, and is then entitled to carry out an internal investigation themselves before the International Criminal Court gets involved in making a ruling. And Israel argued that the concept, the principle of complementarity was not fully upheld during the time that the trial took place against Gallant and against Netanyahu. And as such, their arrest warrants that were issued following the trial are not valid. And two judges on the committee agreed. They felt that that was indeed the case, and they looked at the notifications that were issued, which were apparently not issued according to the proper guidelines that had been laid down. And as such, those two judges felt that complementarity was not adhered to in this case, even though Israel is not a member of, not signed up to the Rome Statute. Unfortunately, there were three judges who agreed that the arrest warrants should stay in position. And so that is the way it is right now. What does that mean? Well, it continues to be a little difficult for those individuals to move around the world, to gain overfly rights and to visit certain countries. Up until now, it hasn't seemed to affect Prime Minister Netanyahu's ability to conduct his business in any significant way. But it is unfortunately a little bit of a setback for Israel's case in the International Criminal Court. We know that there are still other activities going on, some of which have been initiated by the South African government. We're aware of that. All of that still continues to play in the background of the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice. But at least for now, this case has been heard by the appeals chamber, and the decision was made, And unfortunately, there is now nowhere else to go in order to try to challenge that decision.
And in the minute that remains, I wonder if you can address the final issue, that of Australian Prime Minister Albanese separating the call for a Palestinian state from the Bondi massacre. What's your view?
Yeah, so Albanese has been desperately clutching at straws in order to try somehow to separate actions that were taken by the Australian government over the last 2 years on the issue of Hamas and Gaza and the war in Gaza and the calls for a Palestinian state. And of course, we know that the Australian government was one of those who stood up to recognize a Palestinian state, which is really not, they're not able to do because there is nothing to recognize. And now he's trying to clutch at straws saying, oh, that's had nothing to do with the massacre in Bondi. I respectfully disagree. And I think not only that it had something to do with it, but I think that it was one of the catalysts. It was one of the things that actually emboldened and empowered the individuals in Australia who felt that they could go onto the Sydney Harbour Bridge and demonstrate and could ultimately carry out a massacre in Bondi Beach. One of the interesting things for Israel right now in the wake of that event in Australia is to potentially re-examine its relationship with Jews in the diaspora. And this is a very fascinating and quite deep subject that we can't address in the few seconds that we have left. But I'm just leaving it with the listeners to potentially, you know, think about it for themselves, how they view their relationship as Jews with Israel or as non-Jews with Israel in living in the diaspora. And we Israelis here are looking at the diaspora. It's interesting because once upon a time, the diaspora was very much required to support Israel in order to keep Israel alive and well in the early days of the state. Now that responsibility seems to have shifted in the opposite direction quite substantially. I think there's a lot still to be spoken about on this particular subject.
Anthony Reich, as always, thank you so very much.
That Israel Report was brought to you by The Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.